Welcome to Torah Imecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Ilana Flamenhaft, and today we will be studying Sefer Divrei Yamim Bet, Perek Yud Zayin. Chapter 17 is the first of four chapters about Yehoshaphat, king of Malchut Yehuda, the son of Asa. After the sad ending to his father Asa's reign, Yehoshaphat is a breath of fresh air. He was a righteous and God-fearing king who sincerely sought to lead the people according to Torah values. His initiatives in religious education and judicial reform represent some of the most positive and lasting achievements of any king of Yehuda. He was not perfect, though, and in chapter 19 and part of chapter 20, we will learn about his flawed political judgment when it came to repeated alliances with the corrupt kings of Israel. Overall, Tanakh portrays Yehoshaphat as a good king whose devotion to God was genuine and Yehuda enjoyed relative security. We will begin with verses 1 to 2. Vayimloch Yehoshaphat beno tachtav v'yitzchazek al Yisrael. His son Yehoshaphat succeeded him as king and took firm hold of Israel. V'yiten chayel b'chol arei Yehuda habtzarot v'yiten nitzivim be'eretz Yehuda u'ba'arei Ephraim asher lachad asa aviv. He stationed troops in all the fortified towns of Yehuda and stationed garrisons throughout the land of Yehuda and the cities of Ephraim that his father Asa had captured. Yehoshaphat established himself over Malchut Yehuda, even to the extent of establishing governors in the Ephraimite cities that Asa had conquered. These governors would be civil administrators who presumably worked in tandem with the military garrison. Verses 3 to 4 describe his righteousness. Vayihi Hashem im Yehoshaphat, ki halach b'darchei David aviv harishonim v'lo darash l'ba'alim. God was with Yehoshaphat because he followed the earlier ways of his forefather David and did not worship the Ba'alim. Ki le'elkei aviv darash, u'b'mitzvotav halach lo kema'aseh Yisrael. But worshiped the God of his father and followed the commandments, unlike the behavior of Israel. The assessment of a given reign is often measured in terms of how it is compared to David, the original king of Israel, and the one who came closest to the Torah ideal of kingship. Clearly, the comparison to David in our pasuk puts Yehoshaphat in a category of unusual piety. Yet, how do we understand the words "bedarchei David aviv harishonim"? He followed the earlier ways of his forefather David. Radak suggests one explanation, that Yehoshaphat acted as David had done in the earlier part of his life. In the later years, David wasn't perfect, such as when he married Bathsheba or counted the Jewish people. So earlier means the first part of David's reign. Radak's other explanation is that Rishonim means original, not earlier. David's reign was the monarchy that came closest to reflecting Hashem's vision of what it should be. Yehoshaphat was the only king after him that was able to live up to that exalted model. Malbim translates Rishonim as earlier, but in a different way than Radak. He explained that acceptable standards vary with the spiritual level of a generation. As standards declined, it was relatively easy for a king to be admired. As long as he did not actively serve idols, he could be said to be walking in the path of David. But Yehoshaphat emulated David as the term had been understood in the earlier days when the level, and thus the expectation, was higher. So then we need to understand the end of Pasuk 3. Why does it need to tell us that he did not serve Baal, an ancient Canaanite god whose worship was widespread? According to Sefer Olam Rabbah, Yehoshaphat was married to Omri's daughter. Omri ruled the northern kingdom of Israel after a period of instability and civil strife. He did evil in the eyes of the Lord, more than all who were before him, continuing and deepening the sinful practices of Yerovam ben Nevat, including institutionalized idolatry. So our pasuk is telling us two things. One, even though Yehoshaphat had married into Omri's family, he remained true and loyal to Hashem. Two, his brother-in-law was the evil Ahav, about whom Sefer Melachim writes, Ahav did more to anger Hashem, the God of Israel, than all the kings of Israel who were before him. His spiritual failings went beyond continuing Yerovam's idolatry. He actively institutionalized and promoted Baal worship. It was during Ahab's reign the people were worshiping Baal and Hashem, and Eliyahu HaNavi tried hard on Har Carmel to get the people to be true and loyal to Hashem only. Our pasuk is telling us that Yehoshaphat never ever worshipped both, only Hashem. Then we are told that Hashem gave Yehoshaphat firm control over the kingdom. All of Yehuda brought gifts to Yehoshaphat so that he had abundant wealth and honor. The Midrash points out that when Yehoshaphat became king, all he cared about was the spiritual welfare of his people. And in our verse, we see that confirmed. Wealth and honor flowed to him without any effort on his part. In verse 6, we read an interesting description of Yehoshaphat. Vayigba libo b'darchei Hashem ve'od hesir et habamot ve'et ha'asherim me'Yehuda. He was filled with exuberant self-assurance as he went in the path of Hashem. Moreover, he abolished the bamot and the asherah trees from Yehuda. Normally, the phrase vayigba libo, he was arrogant, carries a negative connotation. So how do we understand it here? Malbim clearly states that vayigba, ba'al tomar shegaval libo be'oshro, kima shegaval libo haya b'darchei Hashem, v'chol shehosif lehatzliach hosif b'yiras Hashem. Do not say that his heart became proud because of his wealth, for the elevation of his heart was in the ways of God, and the more he succeeded, the more he increased in fear of God, and he further removed the bamot and asherah trees. In Chovot Halavavot, Duties of the Heart, Rabbeinu Bachya Ibn Pakude wrote that a degree of pride concerning one's spiritual accomplishments can be legitimate. Kishemit ga'eh ha'chacham b'chachmato, v'hatzadik b'ma'aseu, hodza'a l'godel tovat habore alav, behem v'simcha ba'avaram, v'yigrom lo lehosif lishtadel behem. When a wise person takes pride in their wisdom and a righteous person in their deeds, it should be seen as a recognition of the greatness of the Creator's goodness in them, and as joy on their behalf, inspiring them to improve and continue exerting themselves in them. V'zo ta'ga'ava, eina mazeket l'kniya, v'lomar chaket ota, ubikamoa amar hakatuv vayigbal libo b'darchei Hashem, achi misayad oto umosifaba kimo shekatuv ekev anava yirat Hashem. The kind of arrogance is not detrimental to submission and does not repel it. The verse says of Yehoshaphat, and his heart was uplifted in the ways of the Lord. Just the opposite. Such pride helps humility and increases his submission, as is written in Mishle, in the wake of humility comes fear of the Lord. Yehoshaphat did not satisfy himself with the elimination of all vestiges of idol worship. He took positive steps to spread Torah among the people and sent his officers, Levites, and priests through the cities. Vayilamdu b'Yehuda, v'imahem sefer Torat Hashem, v'yasobu b'chol arei Yehuda, v'yilamdu ba'am. They offered instruction throughout Yehuda, having with them the Torah of Hashem. They made the rounds of all the cities of Yehuda and instructed the people. In the merit of the Torah which they studied, they were able to live in peace with the surrounding nations. Vayihi pachat Hashem al kol mamlechot ha'aretzot asher sivot Yehuda v'lo nilchamu im Yehoshaphat. A terror of God seized all the kingdoms of the lands around Yehuda, and they did not go to war with Yehoshaphat. Not only did they not fight with Yehoshaphat, but they submitted to him and paid him tribute. We're told that the Philistines brought him gifts, as well as the Arabians giving him great flocks. He received so much that we read, Vayihi Yehoshaphat holech v'gadal ad lamala vayiven b'yuda biraniyot v'arei miskinot. Yehoshaphat grew constantly until he became very great, and he built up fortresses and storage cities in Yehuda. He had a great workforce in the cities of Yehuda and soldiers who were mighty warriors in Jerusalem. Then, the last verses of the chapter, 14 to 19, list the number of soldiers in Jerusalem from Yehuda and Binyamin and from what family they came from. It's a lot of psukim with a lot of details. Why do we need this information? Ralbag suggests that it was important to give the numbers of the military in order to show how much Yehuda was blessed by walking in Hashem's ways. Yehoshaphat's grandfather Avia, several decades earlier, had only been able to organize an army of 400,000 soldiers, and now, in Jerusalem alone, Yehoshaphat had 1 million. The kingdom of Yehuda enjoyed peace as Yehoshaphat strengthened and elevated his subjects both spiritually and materially. It's worth pointing out that the reward for Yehoshaphat spiritually doing the right thing was material and political success. We might have thought it should be a spiritual reward. But then, we remember what we say every day in davening when we say Shema in the paragraph of V'haya im shamo tishmeu el mitzvotai. And it shall be, if you shall surely listen to my mitzvos, that I am commanding you today to love Hashem your Lord and to worship Him with all your hearts and with all your soul. And I will give the rain of your land in its time, and you will gather in your grain and your wine and your oil. Is this what we can expect as the reward for keeping Hashem's mitzvos? Is rain in its time, so that we should be able to have our grain, wine, and oil, a proper reward for following the will of Hashem? The explanation of the Sforno on these psukim in Devarim can answer this question. He wrote, V'natati mita artzachem b'ito, Ba'ofen shetit parnasu shelo b'tzar mituchlu la'avdo, that you will be sustained without difficulty and you will be able to worship Him. In other words, the rain and the grain is not the end, it's the means. This echoes the statement of Chazal that mitzvah goreret mitzvah, schar mitzvah mitzvah. One mitzvah brings about another mitzvah because the reward of a mitzvah is a mitzvah. When one properly fulfills the mitzvos that come his way, Hashem provides him with the material sustenance that he needs in order that he should be free to further engage in yet more mitzvos. Of course, we know that there is an olam haba, an afterlife, that awaits us with its eternal reward, and that every mitzvah that we perform in this world accumulates for us great dividends in the next world. But when it comes to the reward that we receive already in this world, we can learn how to relate to that reward. The material comfort that we receive is not an end. Rather, it is there to enable us to continue applying ourselves to serving Hashem. That's exactly what Yehoshaphat did when he removed the idolatrous temples from his kingdom and actively spread Torah learning to all the people. I feel that we are living in an age that places heavy emphasis on possessions and status, where many people are spending beyond their means and feel pressured to keep up with the carefully curated and often unrealistic images they see on social media. We should be careful not to get caught up in this. Instead, we should remember that whatever Hashem gives us is meant to help us serve Him, and we should try to use what we have in the best way that we can. This shir is dedicated L'Zechra Nishmas Marcy Stern, Mincha Yehudi Baki Delyahu. She was a dedicated teacher whose deep love of the Sifrei Nevi'im and Shivat Zion left an indelible mark on her many students.